We begin today with shared parenting. This is the idea that children of separated parents spend as much time with each of them as possible. Perhaps someone you know has an arrangement like this. It's a relatively recent approach. Family law only moved away from custody and access to shared parenting 3 years ago. It was specifically designed to allow fathers to spend more time with their kids. Researchers have been looking at the impact of this change, and clinical psychologist Jennifer McIntosh presents her findings at a family conference in Sydney today. She's with me in the Life Matters studio. Jennifer, welcome. The starting point is equal time for each parent, but how has this worked in practice?
Well, equal or substantive time, I think, is the catchphrase. It's a starting point that has its heart in the right place. And I think if you trace back the origins of the shift in the legislation, we do see that it's about, you know, all good intentions of children being able to have meaningful, ongoing relationships with both parents. The problem, I think, on the ground is that that gets translated quite literally into quantities of time. And
So people are out there with stopwatches.
Well, you know, people are out there really with formulas about what does that mean, what is it, what child support formulas, etc. What does it actually mean in terms of number of nights that kids are spending with each parent? And therein lies some of the problem for some of the population.
All right, so are children happier when they have more time with each parent after separation rather than just on weekends? So are they happier if it's part of their daily or weekly routine?
Well, okay, I'm going to do the annoying researcher thing and say it depends. So what we're doing in our research is sifting through all the layers of looking at, you know, children's outcomes and what leads to what, what's associated with what. Now, in my research project funded by the AGD, Attorney General's Department, we've looked over 4 years at a group of children in very high conflict divorces, and it's pretty clear that these children fall into a couple of different groups, and so I think it is actually important we don't lump them together. So there are kids who, for whom shared care is just a continuation of what was happening before. So mum and dad were both actively involved in bringing them up when they were infants, and they had good relationships with mum and dad. And so it's a continuation of a status quo. It's those arrangements have got flexibility. It's not tit for tat. It's not you've brought them back 15 minutes late, therefore I want my 15 minutes back. Those kids, not surprisingly, are happier living that way than the children that who we've identified who are living in a very different kind of shared care. So a rigid form of shared care where parents do not get on, don't communicate, don't like each other, have a high conflict, high acrimony kind of climate. And typically those kids, so there's been a lot of legal action, these are lawyer-driven arrangements or court-driven orders. That's a very different group of kids. Now, the conundrum is that's the group of kids who are falling under the influence most often of this new legislation that says, really, you ought to be sharing care, provided you can share responsibility.
So essentially you're saying that if the parents can be grown-ups and be reasonable about this, that shared care can work well, but when they're not, the kids are much less happy. Have you done the comparison to how the kids were when it was a different arrangement, when it was more about custody and access?
We don't have samples from pre-legislative days, but we do have a couple of studies in the field where we're comparing children who have, you know, more primary traditional style of caregiving with kids who are sharing at a fairly high rate. So the definition is 5-9, if you want to quantify it.
5-9.
And higher. So 5 nights a fortnight at least with each parent.
Right.
Up to 7-7, which is equal, kind of week about arrangement. So comparing those children to kids who are living, you know, with a little less time with one parent, we find some interesting things. So if you look at school-aged children, certainly the children who like shared care, who think that, you know, they're content in it, their needs are getting met, those kids are younger.
Right.
And as they get older, they start to vote with their feet. The arrangement doesn't suit them so well. And in our study, it was about only 20% really of children over 12 said, yeah, this is the way I want to live.
So as they get older, what they want is what? Certainty, stability.
A primary base. More often than not. So this is, we can't generalise, but more often than not, the primary base is something that they want. In fact, throughout the study, children like shared care a whole lot less than parents do. Mums and dads like it fairly well when it's flexible and communicative, etc. Children don't like it quite as much as parents.
That is interesting, isn't it? Because it would be easy, especially in a conflict type separation, to treat children as kind of possessions, my right to them, etc. And almost, though I'm sure everyone would deny doing this, to forget that they're people with their own personalities and preferences and feelings.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, we do hear a lot about, oh, poor kids living out of a bag and, you know, kids going here, there and everywhere. And at the pragmatic level, this is not a very easy way for kids to live. But what I'm studying now with Bruce Smythe and Margaret Kelleher is the developmental impact of living that way when you're young. So when you're a kindergarten or an infant, age child, what does it do to development to live between two parents? Does, you know, the parenting arrangement matter? Is it actually just about how parents do it? Or does the arrangement itself do something, have some kind of developmental impact?
All right. On Life Matters today, my guest is Jennifer McIntosh. She's a clinical psychologist, and she's speaking at the Family Relationship Services National Conference in Sydney today. We're talking about shared parenting. You might recall this was a change that came in a few years ago now, and it was more about making sure that children of separated parents spent, well, more equal time with each of them. So two homes, two houses, if you like. Jennifer, most separating parents don't end up in family court disputes. They can agree on a parenting plan. Do we know whether equal time or close to equal time parenting is the norm, or does it start to go back towards the previous model where children were mostly with one parent?
Right. I wouldn't say that equal time is yet the norm, but it's moving that way. There's some evidence to suggest that it's on the rise. And I think that's encouraging when you look at the number of children who previously were growing up with the absence of a father, particularly. It's an encouraging development. So, you know, what I'm talking about today in my research findings are not, you know, a blanket caution on shared parenting, but they are a strong caution on a certain population of children for whom shared parenting is not likely to help.
The current law supports shared parenting except where there's evidence of violence or abuse. Women's groups have said it puts children at risk of violence. Is there evidence that risk is greater?
There are strong indications, that children in shared parenting, whether it's flexible or rigid, are quite simply exposed to more conflict than kids who live in a traditional sort of arrangement.
I suppose it makes intuitive sense, doesn't it?
Yes. These parents have to communicate. They have to make decisions together. They have to see each other a lot. And so the rates of conflict that children report are significantly higher, particularly, you know, as their movement between the parents increases. More concerning is that the kids report it's not just general conflict. It's conflict that makes them feel caught up in the middle of it. So it's about me. So at the low end of the spectrum, kids will say, oh, mum and dad get a real tone in their voice when they're making an arrangement about me. And at the upper end of the spectrum, they'll say, look, they just anything to do with me, they will fight about it. So it's the child then who feels, I'm at the centre of this, I'm causing this, And that's a big problem.
What can we say about the effect that has on them?
Well, when you pile that on top of the risks that divorce brings anyway, we know divorce creates risks for kids. We know conflict creates risks for kids. And then you put them in a situation where they're getting more of it. The risks add up. So my longitudinal study with school-age children has shown that, you know, their emotional symptoms are very elevated when they are in a high conflict kind of shared arrangement, so that these kids were troubled to begin with, but the evidence really suggests that this arrangement that has not helped that particular group of kids.
There are several inquiries now reviewing shared care. Would you, given what you've discovered, support the end of shared parenting and a return to the old system where the child lives most of the time with one parent?
No, I don't think that's the way forward. I'm hopeful that at least what this legislation, I think, is flawed. It got way ahead of itself. It's way ahead of the evidence of what's good for children. What are the developmental implications for children? Now, having said that, I'm hopeful that it has encouraged parents who can do it well to think about it more often and to, you know, make themselves emotionally available to their kids. That's what kids need after divorce. The problem is that there aren't any guidelines in the legislation, meaningful guidelines about developmental stages. They're not meaningful guidelines about conflict and communication.
So we need a more nuanced approach.
Much more nuanced. And whether that means, you know, I don't know what the legislative review might look like, but it must be more nuanced. In fact, I think Australia's full of apologies at the moment, but I do think there are a group of children who are going to need an apology because of being put into a situation which has actually exacerbated their difficulties.
Well, I think that's about the point at which we should wrap this up. But thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Jennifer McIntosh is a clinical psychologist. She's speaking at the Family Relationship Services National Conference in Sydney today. Now, you may have a perspective on this. If you do, get in touch. abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. That's the website. Or you can give us a ring on 02 833 1430.